Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Well, with less than 1 week to go before the federal election, tonight we conclude our absorbing Open House series on the lives and especially the faith of our 23 Prime Ministers since Federation with author Roy Williams, who's authored the important book In God They Trust. Then he adds a question mark. We've had an overview of the way Christian faith is connected and changed in its relationship with public life. We've looked at some of our earlier prime ministers, those who've held office in more recent years, all well worth catching on the podcast page of our Open House community website. Tonight, a revealing and perhaps surprising insight into both Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard. And while he's not prime minister, he wants to be, we can't leave out Tony Abbott. Roy Williams, welcome back to Open House.
Thank you for having me, Lee.
I've thoroughly loved this series, of course, being the political tragic that I am, and I'm sad to see it coming to an end tonight. Let's start tonight with Kevin Rudd. Roy, Kevin 07, you categorise him as an ardent seeker. What do you mean by that?
I mean by that that Kevin Rudd is one of the prime ministers in our history who had a genuine passion for theology. He is a thinker. He's been on a journey all his life, and I suspect he hasn't reached his final destination yet. He, like Deacon, our early founding father, and Billy McMahon, a man we haven't really touched on in these talks. These were men who actually read deeply into Christianity and really grappled with their beliefs.
In the book, you have a frank and revealing interview with the Prime Minister Mark II,
yes,
where he reveals he's actually been learning the original language of the New Testament, ancient Greek, to better understand the whole Jesus revolution, as he puts it in the book of Luke.
Yes, I spoke to him late last year, so he was still on the back bench at that stage, and he told me that he'd recently embarked on this process with an expert, I think it was at ANU, in ancient Greek, so that he could delve even more deeply into Luke's gospel and the Jesus story to understand all the nuances of what Luke was actually trying to report. And that's typical Rudd. He is, in person, extremely intelligent and well-read. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that he is utterly steeped in Christianity in terms of its theory, and his knowledge of it is strong. And I don't doubt for a second that he loves it. You know, he loves theology. In the book, I'm quite clear. I think on balance, Kevin Rudd's first term as Prime Minister was good, judged against Christian standards. Now, we all know the criticisms that have been made of him by his colleagues and by others of his personal conduct within the Labour Party and in some of his other personal dealings, and that's one side of him. My personal view, Lee, is that the truth probably lies somewhere in between, as it so often does. I suspect Kevin Rudd was a difficult man to deal with. I mean, I think the evidence is pretty much overwhelming in that regard. He's not a blokey bloke. He's not really a typical product of the Labour Party.
Or the unions.
Certainly not the unions. No. And that obviously was a big problem. His fervent Christianity also, I think, was a turn-off for some people. He has been defended very strongly by a lot of people who must command respect to counterbalance the accounts from his detractors, which I suspect were exaggerated, not invented, but exaggerated for political purposes. And the other thing to remember is this. The best Christian man is not the same thing as the best Christian prime minister. If we were to exclude from our history of prime ministers men who are difficult to get along with and who are heartily disliked by many of their colleagues, we would be left with a pretty short list.
Yes.
And one of the names absent from it would be Sir Robert Menzies. Menzies, too, in his first term as prime minister, was heartily detested by many, indeed probably most, of his colleagues.
Like Rudd.
Exactly like Rudd.
Yes.
Menzies, like Rudd, extremely well-educated man who had fought his way up from very humble childhood to the very top, probably was too self-satisfied. Now, Menzies learnt that lesson the hard way, and he came back a stronger and better man. And I said at the end of my chapter on Kevin Rudd, which went to print weeks before his return.
It's always perils, a danger.
Perils of authorship. It went to print shortly before he returned to the prime ministership and also shortly before his turnaround on gay marriage, but I'll come back to that. He, hopefully, and there's some evidence of this already, he has learnt some of those lessons, as Sir Robert Menzies did. Curtin once said, Curtin liked Menzies and got on with him well, but Curtin once said, I'm afraid in this job you've got to suffer fools, and that's the one thing that Menzies couldn't do. Rudd needs to learn, like Menzies had to learn, that you have to suffer fools. That, of course, is a biblical expression. Paul used it in one of his letters sarcastically.
Suck it up. In the modern vernacular. Can I quote back to you part of your interview with Kevin Rudd? He says, the whole Jesus revolution is about the radical position of putting others first and yourself last. Not making yourselves public, but having yourself as a private human being who acts correctly. But like with the widow's mite, is not wishing to be seen with great flourish, grandeur and glory. What do you think Julia Gillard would say about that quote?
Well, she would undoubtedly raise an eyebrow.
Quite.
And fair enough. It's interesting, Lee. I mean, Kevin Rudd has got it absolutely right. That is the message of Jesus' revolution. No question about that. He, like all of us, fails to live up to it all the time. It's particularly hard for anyone in politics. And I might just read a short quotation of Kevin Rudd's himself. Now, he said this in 2005, so this was before his first term. And it's eerie because he really, in a sense, foreshadowed his own fate. He was asked by Geraldine Doogue on the Compass program whether he ever felt that his faith was being sidelined by politics, by the pressures of politics. And what he said on that occasion, I think, was very thoughtful. He said, I think from time to time there's a real danger of that. The sheer technology of politics, for want of a better term, is mind-boggling. The techniques of politics are mind-boggling, and there's a danger that you see at the end of that, the suffocation of the soul. Many would say, his critics would certainly say, that his first term sort of bore out that warning. The blame doesn't all belong with him by any means. I mean, my personal thesis is that Rudd on balance was more sinned against than sinning. He had been elected by the Australian people. He was a popularly elected Prime Minister, and his deposition was a great sin against him because it was for the Australian people to decide whether he deserved another term.
One of Kevin Rudd's great guiding lights was the pastor prophet martyr Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and you say with Rudd's defeat that completely eradicated what's called the Bonhoeffer effect.
One of the big problems for Labor under Julia Gillard was that it had lost that demographic. It had lost the demographic that Rudd brought to the ALP in 2007. Low-income Christians, both Protestant and Catholic, but particularly Protestant. And some empirical work has been done on this, that the seats in which Rudd got the biggest swings at the 2007 election were seats with the highest concentration of evangelical Christian voters. Low-income, low to middle-income. That's where he made the big difference, not in the, you know, inner-city elite areas. And that, fairly or unfairly, is the demographic that was clearly turned off the most by Julia Gillard. Now, I say fairly or unfairly because personally, Julia Gillard did some good things. But frankly, I think her image as an atheist, or at the very least as an unbeliever, did not help her and did not help Labor electorally. So what a Queensland professor of politics, a man named Harrison, has dubbed the Bonhoeffer effect, which refers to the Christian vote that Kevin Rudd pulled in, had been entirely dissipated. Now, it's interesting. As we speak today, Rudd clearly has pulled back a substantial portion of that vote already. We'll have to see what happens on polling day, but he's been the game changer, and I'm convinced that his Christian profile is a factor in that.
But Rudd's been criticised for using religion for his political advantage.
Yes, he's been accused of that by both people on the coalition side of politics and within his own party. I think unfairly. I mean, there's no question whatever that Kevin Rudd was a committed Christian way before he became a politician. I mean, he didn't invent it out of whole cloth for electoral purposes. It's all on the record. He was raised as a Catholic. He underwent a spiritual journey as a young adult and moved to a Protestant form of faith, although he won't label it Protestant, but he just says Christian. And he's been heavily involved all his life in church congregations, both in Australia and overseas when he was a diplomat. He was a lay preacher when he lived in China. So there's no question of inventing his Christianity for political purposes. A juster observation might be that he made a fairly deliberate pitch for the Christian vote. But his answer to that is that the coalition was already doing that and had done it pretty successfully in the first decade of the 21st century. And Labor had sort of completely dropped the ball and had almost ignored that demographic stupidly because it has had as much claim on it as the coalition. It shouldn't be a party political thing. And all Rudd was saying was, well, I'm a Christian too. And Labor has a history of Christian prime ministers just as the coalition does.
Indeed, they both do.
Yeah.
So to Julia Gillard, and you've come up with a surprising conclusion about her, that she's not the atheist that everyone, and even in a way she says, about herself.
Yes. Let's define atheism, Lee. Atheism is a positive belief, a positive conviction that God does not exist. It's a form of quasi-faith, in other words.
It is,
As people like Richard Dawkins have proved, you know, it's a passionate position, a position not of mere indifference or indecision.
It's a choice. It's a choice of faith.
It's a choice of faith, and it's a worldview.
Yes.
It's a worldview like faith, which affects everything you believe. I mean, you believe this world is all that there is. Definitely. There is no afterlife. This is it. Life is a matter of chance, possibly what we make of it. Julia Gillard has never said anything along those lines. She's never enunciated a philosophy that resembles atheism.
She had a very Christian upbringing.
She had a Baptist upbringing. Her parents weren't practicing Christians, but in the suburb in which she lived in Adelaide as a girl, she attended the local Baptist church for some years, and she actually, on a couple of occasions, when she was Prime Minister, referred to it sort of fondly, the fact that she was steeped in it, her words.
A prize winner.
A prize winner at catechism and so forth. And I think she underplayed that aspect of her upbringing, perhaps. And she didn't have to pretend that she was still a practicing Christian, but perhaps she was a bit too forthright in kind of just dismissing that whole aspect of her life. She, like Curtin and Hawke, substituted the Labour movement for the church.
Why did she lose that faith then?
That I can't tell you. Unlike Bob Hawke, who's sort of gone on the record about that, she didn't explain why. The impression I got was that once she started going to university, first in Adelaide and then Melbourne, she sort of was no longer in contact with her church community and sort of drifted away from it.
But she's had, you say, quite a sensitivity and respect to religious people and religious issues, like gay marriage, for instance.
Well, that's right. She opposed it. She was very strong in her recognition of the vital role of the churches in healthcare delivery, for example. When she was Shadow Health Minister, not many people remember this, but she developed the Medicare Gold policy, which Labor took to the 2004 election. And initially the Catholic Church had gone to Tony Abbott, who was the health minister at the time. He was probably very interested, but he was overruled by the hard heads on the coalition side, and so they went to Labour, and it was Julia Gillard who worked with the Catholic Church to develop that policy. She also made some very good decisions, I think, both as a minister and prime minister in the education field, on traditional teaching methods and the like. She was respectful in her discussions with Christian groups like ACL and so forth. And on gay marriage, it's true, she adopted the orthodox Christian position.
And Rudd now supports it.
Well, he does. He came out a few months ago, typical Rudd, it was a 2,000-word exegesis on his website as to his reasons. Now, let's give Kevin Rudd his due. I don't doubt for a second he has gone through a considered consideration of that issue from both a Christian perspective and other relevant factors, scientific factors. He lays it all out clearly. It's a minority view within the Christian community, but he's far from a lone wolf. I mean, there are liberal Christians who support gay marriage. Some polling evidence suggests that it may have helped politically. It's a good example of a single issue where the vast majority are not affected, so whatever their views, then it's not really going to swing their vote, whereas for those affected, it will swing their vote. The question for Kevin Rudd on that one is whether he gains more gay votes than he loses the very traditional orthodox Christian votes. I don't know. I wouldn't venture. That's a question of sephology, not theology.
We'll soon see. So while he's not PM, he sure wants to be, as we all keep hearing, we should round out our conversation with Tony Abbott. You'd put him in the more than tribal Catholic category.
Yes, I'd no difficulty if he's elected. He'll belong fairly and squarely with Ben Chifley and Paul Keating. And in fact, it's very interesting that Tony Abbott is on record as having praised Chifley on a number of occasions. In his maiden speech to Parliament, he quoted Chifley. He also once wrote that Keating had some of the marks of greatness. Tony Abbott will be an unusual Liberal Prime Minister if he is elected for a number of reasons. He'll be the first Catholic ever to be elected from the Liberal Party. He will also be the first, I think, who was once a member of the DLP, because that's really his background. His natural fit is not, in my opinion, the Liberal Party, nor the Labour Party. It's the DLP. His great mentor in life was B.A. Santa Maria, the monumental Catholic intellectual of the 20th century. And Abbott, until his 30s, was still wavering as to which party he should throw in his lot with. This is all on the record in biographies and his own book, Battle Lines, which is a terrific book. I'd recommend it to anyone really trying to understand Abbott. He's a very interesting character. My views oscillate, I have to admit, Lee. Tony Abbott is capable of both great eloquence in relation to his faith. He's written some lovely stuff. And also, in my opinion, and I realise this is in part a political judgment, some deplorable stuff. He's a strange enigma.
This is an important question to deal with. He's also paid a high price for his well-known Catholic faith. And it's been denigrated in ways, as I've observed, that perhaps anyone else's beliefs or practices, apart from Christian faith, would ever be. He's repeatedly referred to as Captain Catholic and the Mad Monk. People Yep. wouldn't say that about people in the gay community or the Islamic community, for instance.
No, that's perfectly true. It's so ironic because the Liberal Party was once the home of respectable sectarianism, and now you've got Tony Abbott leading it, and he's not far from the only serious Catholic in their ranks. You're more likely to be labelled those sort of derogatory terms in the Labour Party. That's how far we've come.
Yes.
What Abbott really is a social conservative. He's not a true believer in the economics of the Liberal Party. That's clear, and he's got his fierce critics within the party Yep. for that very reason.
So my final question to wrap up the series, what does that say about the place of faith and religion today in public life?
It's a tricky line. Yeah. We've got an unusual election here that both the leaders of the two major parties are serious practicing Christians, but they're much more religiously minded than the electorate. The question is whether Abbott's Catholicism turns off secular, particularly young secular voters who might otherwise, on questions of income and so on, vote for the coalition. I don't know. There might even be a very hard core of sectarianism still there among Protestants. It's possible. Rudd, too, is deeply distrusted within sections of the Labour Party because of his Christianity. He's been slated for it as being a fundamentalist Christian and completely out of tune with the true values of the Labour Party. So they're both battling their own side as much as anything else. I mean, Tony Abbott's opposition to work choices, he shared that with Kevin Andrews, the two Catholics, two really serious Catholics in the cabinet. It's absolutely fascinating because neither of them, frankly, are anything like a traditional fit.
Or typical.
They're both atypical. That's why Rudd, I think, is attractive to some swinging voters because he doesn't fit that Labour class warfare stereotype. He's clearly serious about moving Labour away from the union influence. And Abbott, on the other hand, has an affinity with the blue-collar vote that many previous Liberal prime ministers never had and never even tried to have, whereas Abbott once worked for a concrete company and was a trade unionist. They're interesting characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll find out next Saturday. Roy Williams, I've thoroughly enjoyed these conversations. As I said, it's a very important book for us to dip into for many good lessons of faith and public life. Roy Williams is the author of the book, In God They Trust. The details are up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Roy, thanks so much for the past 4 weeks.
Thank you, Lee. I've really enjoyed it too.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.